Wolltest du schon immer mal nach L.A. reisen?
Hat Leonardo DiCaprio tatsächlich ein Sex-Iglo in seinem Garten?
Warum sieht Jennifer Anistons Haut mit 50 immer noch so gut aus?
Wo wohnt eigentlich Justin Bieber?
In welche Bar solltest du mit deiner besten Freundin hier in Hollywood gehen?
Wie sieht das tägliche Leben in Los Angeles für den deutschen Auswanderer aus?
Und macht Meditation, Cryotherapy und Microneedling dich wirklich zu einem besseren Menschen?
Wenn du dir schon mal eine dieser Fragen gestellt hast, dann bist du genau richtig hier bei Du und Ich in L.A. Wir stellen die Fragen, suchen die Antworten und bringen dir das Leben in Kalifornien ein Stückchen näher. Wir hoffen, ihr hattet alle eine schöne Weihnachtszeit und seid noch schön am Entspannen.
Ja, wir hoffen, der Weihnachtsmann war fleißig und ihr wurdet reich beschenkt.
Ja, und Sophie und ich, wir haben auch was zu feiern, weil wir direkt vor einem Jahr angefangen haben mit diesem Podcast. Und da hatten wir das erste Mal diese Idee. Und ja, also ganz lieben Dank an euch, dass ihr jetzt schon so fleißig zuhört oder auch neu zuhört. Es macht uns echt Spaß, mit euch unsere Liebe zu L.A. zu teilen.
Ja, und wer uns auf Instagram nicht folgt, wird es wahrscheinlich verpasst haben. Ich habe eine kleine Statistik von Spotify geteilt, wo man sieht, dass wir in 19 Ländern gehört werden. Ja, was echt schon krass.
Wow.
Ich dachte, wir wären in einem Haushalt gehört.
Ja, genau. Ich wollte gerade sagen, meine Mama hört auch immer fleißig zu und sogar mein Vater, dem hatte ich jahrelang keinen Kontakt. Aber nein, und ihr natürlich auch. Also 19 Länder.
19 Länder, echt vielen, vielen, vielen Dank. Und heute geht es bei uns auch gleich etwas besinnlicher zur Sache als sonst.
Das stimmt. Aber bevor es losgeht, möchten wir uns bei unseren bisherigen Gästen von 2020 bedanken. Bei den vielen interessanten deutschsprachigen Gästen, die ihre persönliche LA Love Story mit uns geteilt haben und auch über die Ups and Downs vom Auswandern erzählt haben. Leute, die mit einzigartigen Business-Ideen nach LA gekommen sind und Inspiration versprüht haben. Und wir hatten sogar amerikanische Trendsetter aus der Beauty- and Wellness-Industry bei uns im Podcast. Wow, the list is long. Es hat wirklich so viel Spaß gemacht. Und last but not least natürlich auch Filmschaffende. Schließlich sind wir in Hollywood. Die Folgen sind alle online und könnt ihr auch rückwirkend hören bei iTunes, Spotify etc. Und heute in unserer neuen Folge geht es um unsere Lieblingsstadt L.A., die aber wie andere Großstädte nicht nur ihre Sonnenseiten hat, sondern eben auch ihre Probleme. Es gibt nämlich um die 40.000 Menschen, die in Los Angeles kein Zuhause haben. Sogar 60.000, wenn man die Vororte dazu zählt. Und viele von ihnen leben in Skid Row. Das ist die Obdachlosengegend in Downtown L.A., nur 10 Minuten von Silver Lake, wo wir jetzt gerade sind, entfernt. Dort sieht man wirklich ein Zelt neben dem anderen und die Menschen schlafen auch in Pappkartonbauten. Überall liegt Müll, also es ist wirklich ganz schlimm. Und zum Glück gibt es die Menschen, die es sich zum Lebensziel gemacht haben, Obdachlose zu unterstützen und sie von der Straße zu holen. Unter anderem Georgia Berkovich, unser toller Gast heute. Sie arbeitet nämlich für die Organisation Midnight Mission. Und Midnight Mission ist ein Zentrum direkt auf Skid Row, wo Essen, Schlafplätze und sogar Rehabilitierungsprogramme angeboten werden. Wir haben mit ihr gesprochen, um euch auch diese Seite von L.A. näher zu bringen.
Genau, und bei wir meinen wir Silke, weil ich mit meiner Familie jetzt schon in Weihnachten sitze und bei dem Interview nicht dabei sein konnte. Aber es ist auf jeden Fall uns auch wichtig, wirklich ein reales Bild von L.A. zu präsentieren. Und die Obdachlosigkeit in L.A. ist wirklich unfassbar hoch und es ist wirklich ganz schlimm, das zu sehen. Bei mir um die Ecke ist auch so ein Obdachlosencamp, wo sie jetzt auch Weihnachtsbäume und so weiter da stehen haben. Also das ist auf jeden Fall mal eine Seite von L.A., die man sonst nicht präsentiert bekommt.
Ja, wirklich heartbreaking, aber total positiv und inspirierend, dass es solche Menschen wie Georgia gibt. Sie hat nämlich selbst viel erlebt und viel durchgemacht, bevor sie überhaupt anfangen konnte, anderen Menschen zu helfen. Außerdem erzählt sie uns, wie ein Tag auf Skid Row für sie aussieht und wir erfahren, wie wir uns für Obdachlose engagieren können.
Genau.
Bleibt dran. Hi, Georgia.
Hello.
Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us today.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you for reaching out.
Yeah, no, it's such an important, topic, homelessness in Los Angeles. And so, of course, we thought about you because you've done so much for the homeless people in the city. First of all, maybe you can give us an overview of the Midnight Mission. We know it was founded in 1914 and is one of LA's largest social service providers. What does the Midnight Mission offer?
Sure. Thank you for asking. So the Midnight Mission basically has five services that I like to break it down into the five services. So the first one is immediate subsistence, food, shelter, clothing to any man, woman, or child in need, no questions asked, at no charge. The second thing is we have a world-renowned drug and alcohol recovery program for people suffering from addictions who are homeless. We have a family living facility called Homelight Family Living that we opened in 1995 when we saw an increase in homeless families on the street. And that is at a different location. It's not in our downtown facility because we find that that area is not conducive to families and children. But we have our family living facility. And then we have what's called crisis and bridge housing for homeless people, for men and women. And what that is to say is to crisis and bridge is services that are available to people experiencing homelessness that they just need to be connected with. So it may be a 14-day stay up to a 90-day stay. And then we have, we manage a shelter in Orange County. We were commissioned by the County of Orange, and that's a shelter that sleeps about 450 people a night. Having said
that's great.
Everything I've told you is during non-COVID times. You know, we've had to make a lot of adjustments to try and keep everybody as safe as possible. Some of the things that stand out about the Midnight Mission, obviously, you've already said we were founded in 1914. We don't rely on government funding, which allows us to treat the individual versus the dollar. We do receive some government funding, but we're not reliant upon it. And we're very proud of that. And we feel like that has helped us to make a significant difference. The other thing is that although we're called a mission, we are not a religious organization. We don't believe that people need to believe in something to get help. It's the other way around. They need to get help to believe in something. And so we encourage people to find their own higher power, whatever that is. We welcome people from synagogues and Catholic churches and Christian fellowships and anyone, everyone is welcome. And we follow the 12-step philosophy in our treatment of people experiencing homelessness, just as we do with people experiencing drug or alcohol problems. That same philosophy works. And that is to encourage people to find their own higher power. Yeah. So those are some of the things that make us different and that stand out for sure.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that. I just got goosebumps when you said they don't have to be religious. They don't have to believe in anything because it's true. They need to be helped in order to have a dream again or to believe in something. You put it in very right words. Do you mind repeating that, what you just said? It was really beautiful.
Sure. I said that we don't believe that people need to believe in something to get help. They need to get help to believe in something.
So true. Before going into further details about the Midnight Mission, can we talk about the numbers of homeless people in our city? Because I read that there are about 40,000 people on the streets in Los Angeles. Is that a correct number? And how many of them sleep on Skid Row?
Yeah, so the last homeless count was about 60,000 people in the county of Los Angeles. And then in the Skid Row area, there are varying numbers. It depends on if you count the people who are in shelters or just on the street, but it can be anywhere from, you know, 4,000 to 7,000 people in the 50 square blocks of Skid Row, which is just unthinkable. I mean, if you drive to Skid Row, to any of that area, it is so shocking to see people like you or me, divided by circumstance, who are living on our streets, sleeping on our streets. It's heartbreaking, and I'm still after working at the Midnight Mission for all these years, I am still shocked every time I come to work.
Oh my God, yes, yeah. No, I have the pictures right in front of me. And for those who don't know, you know, the LA area so well, how would you describe Skid Row? You mentioned earlier that the area includes about 50 blocks.
Yes, but the heart of it is really in, like we're in the center of it. We're at 6th and San Pedro. And so the concentration is really between 7th and 5th, but it expands beyond that. But there's a large concentration in that area. That's where a lot of the service providers like the Midnight Mission are. And that was an idea, from what I understand, many years ago in the city planning that they would create this area of containment. But what that's created is this third world where, you know, everybody who is homeless ends up in this area because that's where all the services are. And you know, we hear our partners and everyone saying the same thing, and that is that we need regional services. We need people in all of the different 88 cities of the county to have homeless services in their communities so everyone's not forced into this little area, because it is not only the largest concentration of homeless people, it's also a really large concentration of people trying to recover. Mm-hmm. It's hard to recover in a place like that, where you walk down the street and you can get any kind of drug, alcohol. People are trying to buy things, sell things, including your person. You know, it's a tough area.
Yeah, absolutely. And then on the other hand, just a couple blocks away from Skid Row, you have these, you know, beautiful new lofts, hipster restaurants, trendy boutiques. I mean, something doesn't seem right. I mean, the numbers, I don't know, the mayor of LA, Eric Garcetti, said that LA has made progress on the homelessness issue, but the numbers, aren't they increasing?
Yes. I'm glad that you brought that up, because that's something that is, it's confounding, and you think, how could this be? But each year we are housing more and more people, but each year the count goes up. And so what that tells us is that the things that are feeding homelessness need to be addressed. What we're doing is we're simply putting a Band-Aid on something that needs to be healed, that needs to be fixed. And that is, you know, our lack of affordable housing, poverty, our prison system, our education system, you know, all of those things are feeding homelessness. And so we're trying to get people out of homelessness, but really there needs to be more of an effort on those things that feed homelessness.
Sounds like a lot of necessary work ahead. What can the city do in regards to preventing homelessness? Should the money be distributed differently?
I can talk to you about what we're doing at the Midnight Mission and what works for us. But I can tell you that, you know, everybody is looking for that one thing that's going to end homelessness. And what we know is it's going to take many different things, because the reasons people are homelessness are so varied. And so the solutions must be too. You know, there was a point where people were saying, housing first, we just need to get people a place to live. But there's more to it than that, because there's life skills and counseling and things that need to happen. So we also need transitional housing where people can learn job skills and heal and learn life skills. There also needs to be shelter. So we need to keep doing everything we're doing, because the reasons people become homeless are always going to be varied. People don't become homeless for one reason. Some people become homeless and they can quickly have that period of homelessness ended by simply getting them reconnected with their family, getting them reconnected with some help with rent, some help, some just a little bit of help can get them back. And then there's other people who are homeless for different reasons. And they need a lot more help, and they need a lot more time and care. And then there are people who need permanent supportive housing, which is to say that they're always going to need some kind of assistance. At the Midnight Mission, our philosophy is to restore people to self-sufficiency. That is our goal. But Having said that, there are always going to be people who can't be restored to self-sufficiency for various reasons. You know, we've had all sorts of people with different mental health issues, physical issues that will always need assistance. And so there's got to be places like ours that also address those folks as well.
Yeah. What does a day for you in the Midnight Mission look like usually?
Oh my gosh. You know, it's so different every day, which is one of the things I love about it. I kind of laugh because I make a list of my things to do each day. I'm very detail oriented. And so I have my little list, and then the day starts, and then I watch that list just fade into the background as we do whatever needs to be done, you know, because we're dealing with life and death every day. So the priorities are really to plan the best we can, but to be present in the moment. And I think so much of what we do is our relationships with our homeless community. It's not in any of our literature or on our website, but we are our homeless community's family. We're there every day, breaking bread with them, three meals a day every day. We have a mail service where people can send and receive mail, which doesn't seem like a big deal to the average person, but for somebody who's homeless, that's a really big deal. We have an education center, we have a computer lab. And one of my pet projects is we have a music and art program. We have a series called With a Mission, and we have a music program, an art program, and then we have open mics for our community that are hosted.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah, that are hosted by comedians. And this is something else I love about the Midnight Mission is that I work for an organization that understands that music and art are to the soul what food is to the body. And for some of us, it's just that important. And also with these other programs that we have, like art, music, and those kind of extracurricular things, one of the most important things that happens in those programs is the connection with other people. It's another way to build relationships, to have a shared experience, to create hope, to create moments of sweetness in an otherwise, scary, lonely, horrific day, depending on what's going on in Skid Row that day. It's a safe place for people to come. And music's a great equalizer, like pain.
Yeah.
You know, when we're experiencing something together, it unites us. And I think so much of recovering from addiction and from homelessness has to do with that sense of belonging and that sense of family and that sense of community. And it's so, so very important.
Yeah, absolutely. And like I told you before we started the recording, my boyfriend played a benefit show at the Midnight Mission a couple of years ago. He's a musician.
Yes, yeah.
And he was very touched by the people he met that night. And just seeing what you guys do is just really impressive. So yeah, it's wonderful to know that you're including music so much. I mean, we like to say music can change the world, right? So speaking of hope, can you share a story of somebody who entered your rehabilitation program and who found their way back to a more normal, healthy life?
Oh my gosh, I have hundreds and hundreds. Yeah, I think that's such an important part too of what we do. You know, some people refer to people experiencing homelessness as the homeless. And words really matter. Because when we say, when we say the homeless, it is a way of us taking something that's just unthinkable, intolerable, unwatchable. You don't want to see it. You don't want to know it. But I can just say, oh, that's the homeless, you know, and it's in this category. It's all kind of neatly contained. But when I tell you about a homeless woman named Marita, who loved to dance and who lived on the street and was so broken and so angry and so dirty. And she would come to our facility for meals. And, you know, I would try and talk to her and she was often very angry and did not want to talk. But she would come to our music program and I would watch her change as the music got into her nooks and crannies of her heart and soul. And I would see her face change and she would get up and she would just dance and dance. And I would grab a dance with her whenever I could, because it was like this window was open and I could say, hi, how are you today? And it just opened everything up. With Marita, sadly, she ended up dying in our courtyard, which was heartbreaking. And I remember talking to our security director, Marcus, who's been there longer than I have. He's been there about 2 decades. And I told him how heartbroken I was that Marita died alone in our courtyard. And he reminded me that she was in the place that she felt most safe. She was in the place that she came for meals. She was in the place, she died in the place where she felt the most joy, and that she actually did die where, what she called home. That's not a super positive example, but I just wanted to give you that one. But there's so many people in our program. We have something called a work therapy program. So everyone who comes into the Midnight Mission that's going through either Crisis and Bridge or our recovery program has a work therapy assignment, which is to say they work in one of our departments. So I always have either one or two people who are currently in our program working in my department. And it's a way to get them back into the workforce, to help them to start feeling some self-worth.
Yeah.
You know, and so several of those folks who have come through my department as a work therapy participant have become my employees. And right now I have someone working, our volunteer manager is a man who came through our program who was living on the streets and just had the most horrific story. And on the outside, you would have thought was so hopeless. And he came through our program, he got sober, he stayed sober, and he's coming up on 5 years of sobriety. And I just promoted him to the manager position this year. That's just one of many. And I've had several other folks who have come through my department that I've hired on that have gone on to other careers. And one went back to his family. And I've seen families reunited. And I think that that's how we're going to end homelessness, is one person at a time. When I think of 60,000 homeless people, and sometimes when I drive to Skid Row and just look around, I want to go to bed and pull the covers over my head. Mm. But when I work with one person and I see one person get it, get help, and then start working to help others, to get to, you know, give them a hand up and take what they've been given and then try and help someone else. And this movement of getting help and then helping others has been inspiring. And it's what keeps me coming back every single day.
Yes. Yeah. It's really honorable how you've devoted your life to help the homeless. And I think what's important to mention here is that one of the reasons might be that you can identify with some of them very strongly because you had your own experience with addiction, I believe.
Absolutely.
What did your life look like back then?
Yeah, I often, when I give tours of the Midnight Mission, I'll save that bit about myself until I've kind of shown people around and we're kind of wrapping up the tour, and I'll mention my story. And I love to see people's faces because I don't look like my story anymore. And I think that it helps to change that face of homelessness, that anyone can be homeless, you or me, anyone can suffer from addiction. It's not just the homeless, you know, but for me, I grew up with a single mom. I started partying with the older kids just to feel a part of, but because I'm an alcoholic, it took off for me really quickly. And because I didn't really have any rules or anything, my alcoholism was able to grow very quickly at a young age. So by the time I was in my 20s, I had also developed a problem with crack cocaine, and I was fired from a job and evicted from where I lived, and I had no place to go. And if it weren't for my best friend's parents, who had a room in their basement, I too would have been on the street. And so they took me in, and through a series of events, I ended up getting connected with 12-step recovery. And I got sober in a group that was founded by Clancy Immisland, who was at the Midnight Mission since 74. So for many, many years, he just passed away this year, but he had founded this 12-step group, and there was a bunch of people who were coming to volunteer at the Midnight Mission on holidays. And I started doing that. Homelessness was always something I was afraid of. It was always something I saw as my final destiny, like I'm eventually going to end up there. And we were very poor, and I didn't have anything to fall back on. So it was always my greatest fear. And as I came to volunteer, I would cry as soon as I hit the Skid Row area. It was so horrible to see how people were living. But I'd put on a smile, and I'd serve a meal, and I'd go home and cry. But I kept feeling the pull to come back and to come back. And about 11 years ago, I started volunteering on a more regular basis, and a job became available. And so I applied for it, because it turns out the Midnight Mission is where I want to be when I'm not working. And so now I've been an employee for the last 11 years. And one of the benefits of, so I've been sober since February 1st, 1993. And many of the people that I work with have either graduated from the Midnight Mission program or are like me, have a story of some kind of drug and alcohol recovery. And one of the great benefits in that is when people say, "You don't know how I feel." We can say, "No, we do know how you feel. Mm-hmm. And this is what we did. We're just a few 24 hours ahead of you. Come and go with us. Do what we do. You'll have what we have." And so it, you know, that identification is so important when somebody is suffering from something and they don't feel that you understand, then it's hard for them to listen to a solution. But when you let them know, "I understand and I'm just like you," there's so much hope.
Yes. And make them feel, you know, as important as you would make feel someone in your own family or friend, right? And not talk yes. down to them. Wow, what a heartbreaking story, but mostly inspiring, Georgia. Yeah, almost 30 years sober.
Yes. Who would have thought?
Yeah, what a wonderful, positive example. And, you know, I was wondering, all of us walk by homeless people sometimes. Some people like to avoid them. They cross the street, or, you know, others think, you know, what can we do? Or why are they homeless? They must have friends or family that could help mm-hmm. them. But unfortunately, that is not always the case. What are the main reasons? And you already mentioned earlier, there's so many different reasons for homelessness.
Well, you know, I'm glad that you asked that too, because there's this idea like, well, there's a homeless person in my neighborhood and I know he doesn't want help, or I know she doesn't want help. And I would just like to change the idea there. So on the surface, I have asked many people who are laying on our streets, I'll say, "Hi, how are you? Would you like to come in? Do you need help?" No. But what they're saying no to is what their idea of help is. It's not what we know it is. So for me, before I got sober, all my reality was all of my experiences. I could not see a better life for myself. I could not see my way out of the way that I was living and the life that I thought I was destined to have. I had someone else who showed me the way to that. And I think that a lot of the people who are on our streets, they're not there overnight. You know, it has taken months and years for them to end up there. And so during those months and years, they've lost faith. They've lost hope. Sometimes the last bit of freedom somebody has is that freedom to sleep where they want. So even if you're a homeless person and we can get you into a program, you've got nothing. You've got no money, you've got no place to live, you've got no car. So now you're living in a place where they're going to tell you when you have to wake up and when you go to sleep and what you eat. And the last bit of freedom you have may be that choice to decide where you lay your head at night and decide when you wake up. So I think it's just, we have to think beyond what we see on the surface. There's so much more to it. And nobody dreamed of being homeless. This is nobody's dream. Nobody's getting away with something. I know there's that idea, you know, they're living off my tax dollars. But I don't think anybody dreamed that they would sleep on a sidewalk that they also use the restroom on. You know, that is not a dream. That is the end of a dream.
Yeah. How many people can enter your program and how do you choose them? Because if it was up to you, obviously you would help every homeless person, but unfortunately that is not possible.
Well, typically we sleep about 270 people at the Midnight Mission, then another in the building, and then another 100 at night in our courtyard. And then sometimes we open up our cafeteria when it's raining or cold. But right now in the midst of COVID, you know, everything is different. But I'm talking to you in non-COVID times. You know, people are coming and going. And so we don't have a huge wait list like you might think. And if there's somebody who needs to get into a program quickly and we don't have a bed available, then we'll refer them somewhere else. So that's something else that I really love about what we do, is that even if we can't help somebody at our facility, we'll refer them to another place they can get help.
Yeah, that's great. I can imagine that it would be difficult to help someone who refuses help. I mean, we can't force anybody or any addict to take the first step. So what do you do to gain their trust?
Yes. Yeah. People do need to want help. And that, I think, as I was kind of alluding to a little bit earlier, is that that's one of the things that happens as a byproduct of serving three meals a day in our art and music program, is we're building relationships. And in building those relationships, we're building trust and we're creating hope. And then we're showing people that there is a different way, that there is a better way that we can help. And in that building of trust and hope, we're just waiting for them to say, yes, I'm ready. There's one guy in our program right now who is the sweetest man. And he used to sit in our courtyard and talk to himself just for hours. And he would come to art and music, but he was always kind. He was always sweet, just a gentle soul. And I remember the day that one of our program managers said his name and said, he's in our program. I screamed. I was in my office. I screamed. I dropped everything. I went running down the hall, and he was in our program's office, and he was sitting on the bench waiting to get a bed assigned. And I'm like, you're here. You're here. I think I frightened him a little bit, but I calmed down. I'm like, I'm so happy you're here. I hope to see you often. And so I still, you know, I'm still amazed and filled with joy when I see somebody that I've seen on the street for years come inside, because I know that there's hope.
Oh, yeah, that must be such a beautiful and rewarding feeling. Wow, what stories. I would love to know, is there any special Christmas event that you have? What do you do for the holidays?
Okay, so I'm going to talk to you COVID and non-COVID. So every year on Christmas, or for the 2 months leading up to Christmas, we do a toy drive. And we collect all these toys. And then on Christmas morning, we distribute toys to 2,000 homeless and near homeless kids in the neighborhood. But because of COVID, we cannot have our event this year. So what we're doing is we're still doing a toy drive. And we're going to make sure that the people who are in our program, that they have toys for their children. And then we're partnering with some neighborhood churches who can distribute the toys to their the people in their neighborhood. So there's not one main place where people are going to gather, which is, you know, we don't want that happening right now in the middle of COVID. Typically, we serve a big Christmas brunch too. And we will, on Christmas, we will still be serving three meals a day as we do every day. Our lunch service will be a traditional Christmas meal. But right now we're serving to-go meals to our guests. Normally they would come into our dining room and sit down and they would be served. But because of COVID, we're serving to-go meals, but they will be a traditional Christmas meal. And sadly, we will not be doing our toy giveaway on Christmas, but we are collecting toys that we are distributing through the community in other ways to make sure that we keep everybody safe.
Yeah, those are fantastic initiatives. And how sad that we are still in the pandemic. How has the pandemic affected homelessness? Are there more homeless than ever before?
Well, I don't think we've seen that uptick yet. I think it takes a little bit more time. You know, in 2008, when our economy crashed, it took a few years before we started seeing that reflected in our numbers. But we've been working very diligently to keep COVID out of our facility and off of Skid Row. But sadly, it is here, and we're in the midst of an outbreak right now. And so we're testing. Where anyone who's tested positive is being moved into quarantine that the public health department is providing. And that's really our focus right now, is to keep people safe. But sadly, it's now on the streets too. And the streets of Skid Row, the street testing has been very low. And I think that's because the people who live in Skid Row have been socially distancing. They don't go to supermarkets or airports or the things, you know, that you and I do. But our fear was always that people like you or me who do all those things would bring it to Skid Row. And sadly, I think with Thanksgiving, there were a lot of folks who came down, and well-meaning people served on the streets, distributed things. And as a result, we've seen a horrible uptick, and it's in our facility now. Well, it's not in our facility. It hit our facility. And so we're just doing the best we can to keep everybody safe.
Yes, yes. And hoping for a better 2021.
Gosh, yes.
Oh, yes.
2021.
Before we wrap up, I'd like to know, what is the success rate of people recovering from homelessness after seeking help at the Midnight Mission?
We get asked that a lot, and it's hard to measure that because everybody has a different meaning of success, or a different what success means to them. So is it that when somebody graduates our program that they are able to be self-sufficient and they're sober? And is it that they're like that for a year, 5 years? Or is it just that they're able to be self-sufficient? Do they need to be sober? Is that considered success? So it's kind of hard to measure that. But I do know that in our recovery program, our success, we've been measuring our success by those who graduate who are self-sufficient. And I don't have those figures for you, but I could get them for you.
But no, you're absolutely right. You know, everyone has their own success story, and success has many, many, many definitions. Like you mentioned Marita earlier, I'm very sorry that she passed away. But during the time she had with you and at the Midnight Mission, she probably felt more joy than in a long time, right? So that is kind of a success story as well, because you improved her life and she was able to dance and feel joy.
Yes, yes. And you know, and people will say, well, what's an hour and a half of music or art? How is that going to help somebody who's homeless? And I would argue that it is, because those moments of sweetness create hope, and they create relationships. And with that, everything else is possible. And so so all of it matters.
Yeah. And if one of our listeners is now really eager to help, how can he or she do that?
So if you want to help the Midnight Mission, you can go to midnightmission.org. That's our website, or we're on everything. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. We're even on TikTok now. So you can visit us there and keep up with everything going on. But no matter where you live or whatever your passion is, find something to support. I think if everybody supports something that they feel passionate about, we can make a really huge difference. There's so many different ways that you can help someone. And I think it's important to always follow your gut. So if something doesn't feel safe, if you approach someone that doesn't feel safe, that's okay. Follow your gut. But most of the folks on our street would welcome, even if you don't give them money, if they're asking for money, just to see them, just to say hello, to wish them a good day. But if you have clothes that you want to donate, there's all sorts of organizations that accept clothes donations. If you have non-perishable food, those are great donations. There's so many ways to donate online now, too. But there is no shortage of ways to give.
Yeah, thank you so much for sharing all this valuable information with us. And thank you for doing what you do. Help the people that are less fortunate than us, have no home, no food. And if some of our listeners would like to make a little donation over the holidays, they can go onto the Midnight Missions website.
Yes. And once we're through the pandemic, we have tons of volunteering opportunities. We have about 18,000 volunteers who come through the Midnight Mission every year, with the exception of this year, of course, because we haven't been able to have on-site volunteering since the onset of the pandemic. But we also try to accommodate things that other people feel passionate about. You know, we had, there was a Superior Court judge who was a runner, and he wanted to do something outside of his job. As a judge, he was required to make certain decisions based on his robe and his, you know, the law. And he wanted to do something outside of that. And he was a runner. And so he came to us, Judge Craig Mitchell, and he said, I want to start a running club. And he started a running club at the Midnight Mission. And they have run international marathons. They run locally. So that was just an example of one person who had a passion. You know, so if there's something, you know, we have people who teach yoga, we have people who do meditation classes. And, you know, once we're through the pandemic, there are so many ways you can volunteer.
Yes, that's wonderful that you mentioned that. And interesting, you mentioned the judge, because my friends did a documentary on him and homeless
Gabby
people started running.
Mark.
Say it again.
Mark and Gabby are my favorites.
Oh, my God. I know them so well. I'm so happy you mentioned them. And I can't remember. Oh, I think it's called Skid Row Marathon, right? The documentary?
Oh. It's the best movie. It's
yes.
The best movie.
And it's won many awards and been screened around town and other cities at festivals. So I will definitely post the link in the show notes so people can get an idea of all the positive examples that are born out of Midnight Mission. And so thank you so much, Georgia. It was really very lovely and interesting talking to you.
Oh, thank you. And thank you for your interest. I really appreciate it.
Merry Christmas and a nice holiday time.
Thank you. And to you. Bye-bye.
Hallo, so das Online-Gespräch mit Georgia Berkovic ist jetzt zu Ende. Vielen Dank, dass ihr euch die Zeit genommen habt. Die Folge liegt uns wirklich sehr am Herzen. Ihr könnt, wenn ihr möchtet, eine Kleinigkeit spenden. No pressure. Hier nochmal die Website www.midnightmission.org. Und der Dokufilm, über den Georgia und ich zum Schluss gesprochen haben, der heißt Skid Row Marathon, kann ich wirklich nur empfehlen, könnt ihr euch zum Beispiel auf Amazon Prime anschauen. So, jetzt wünsche ich euch einen guten Rutsch in ein natürlich fabelhaftes, neues, gesundes Jahr. Alles, alles Liebe aus LA von uns. Tschüss!